morning, everyone. We'd like to call the June 29, 2022 post-council meeting to order. It's located at Public Safety Education and Training Center, 410 West, 9800 South, in Sandy, Utah. And those that are excused are Dr. Matt Checkitz, Chief Alan Swanson. For proxies, we got Major Bo Mason for Colonel Rappage and Travis Knorr for Director Nelson. We also need to excuse Mayor Walker. Is there any other individuals that need to be excused? With that, we'll go ahead and proceed. We'd like an approval of the March 31, 2022 minute meetings. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Got a motion from Spence Austin, a second.
Second.
Second from Elena Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, minutes are approved. Let's go ahead and move forward to quarterly reports with Lieutenant Jacqueline Moore and Lieutenant New.
So for the quarter of March 1st, 2022 to May 31st, post-investigations received 77 complaints. We opened 37 investigations. We conducted one administrative hearing. We closed 9 cases with no action. And we received 3 voluntary relinquishments. 2 of the allegations were related to sexual conduct on duty, and 1 was official misconduct. For applicant background reviews, we did 245 basic training applications, 30 dispatcher applications, and 39 waiver reactivation applications. We currently have 73 open investigations, and 53 of those are active. Any questions? Thank you.
Good morning. For post-basic training for the quarter of March 1st, 2022 to May 31st, 2022, we certified a total of 88 officers, which makes 158 for the calendar year. Special function officers, we certified 21, with 39 currently enrolled. And for law enforcement officer, we certified 67 officers with 72 enrolled and 4 LEO candidates that are actually making up classes. So we anticipate certifying 71 total. We also have a total of 111 enrolled for upcoming classes, and we anticipate full classes throughout the rest of the calendar year. Any questions? And for in-service classes, excuse me. We also offered 51 in-service classes, graduating 1,004 officers and 33 dispatchers. Any questions on that? Thank you.
Thanks, Lieutenants. Now, I'd like to turn the time over for the 2022-2023 quarter one curriculum update from Mark Scott.
Just a quick update on what we've been doing this last quarter. So duty to intervene was approved by the council last session. We have been teaching it at our academy. We've had 2 classes, and we think it's a great course. So all the satellite academies will begin teaching it beginning July 1 of 2022. The additional courses that we've updated this quarter that will begin for July 1 is liability of peace officers. We revised some of the information on liability of peace officers, made sure we updated all the information regarding so the federal issues and also the state issues. We updated our intro to Utah criminal code, intro to Utah criminal to the court system, intro to U.S. and Utah Constitution, and then we updated the majority of our law courses due to the revisions in the last session. So we removed a lot of our information from direct citations to criminal code. We've just made it a lot cleaner on our law courses. So that's from 1060 to 1140, which include our 2 crimes against the individual, as they're now called, instead of crimes against person, crimes against property, 1 and 2, crimes against the family, crimes against the administration of government, crimes against the public order and decency, controlled substance law, and the Alcohol and Beverage Control Act. So those are the revisions we've been doing, working on, to ensure that our cadets are getting the information that they need, and we can push them out to the agencies with everything that they need. I'm just going to move on to the next item. So that's in regards to the special function and law enforcement officer changes. The next recommendation we have, or request that we have, is in regards to the FEMA courses. So currently we have two courses called Patrol 1050 and Patrol, actually Patrol 1040 and Patrol 1050. So it's our national intro to the incident command system and the national incident management system. They're both 3-hour courses that we offer. What we propose is we would still like them to be a requirement to be completed before the end of the academy, but we will be shifting those hours. And we've actually done this already in our academy, but this would be for the other satellite academies as well, to shift the hours to defensive tactics and to scenario training. So these cadets will still be required to obtain those certifications from FEMA, but we will be using the hours more appropriately so that we can better train them. And so we would need a vote on that, because we would be moving them from courses to simply just completion items.
You want a motion?
Yes, if I could.
I'd like to ask for a motion to approve the changes as recommended by Mark Jockey.
I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation.
We have a motion to accept the recommendation from John Crowley. Do we have
second.
A second? Second from Janetta Williams. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The last item we have on the quarter one curriculum update is the TIMS item. I'm actually going to have Major Bill Mason talk a little bit about this, if he's fine with that. I'm sorry for throwing you on the spot. Colonel was going to speak a little bit about this, but Major Stevenson will also speak a little bit about this in regards to the TIMS.
Who would like to go first?
I can touch on it if you like. I wasn't given a heads up.
No, and like I said, Colonel was going to talk about it. That's why I apologize for that.
A brief overview of what it is. For those that don't know, the TIMS is a national strategy to increase officer safety on roadside, to open roadways quicker, and increase the safety for the citizens involved, as well as tow trucks, fire, all first responders. It really is a national training standard that Utah's lagging in, so it's actually tracked nationwide how many agencies have received the TIMS training. We offer it. We have instructors, certified instructors that can go out and teach it to any agency, but it is a big push nationwide. We've seen the benefits of conducting it and increase to safety. It does also increase roadway efficiency, but the primary goal is ultimately first responder safety. And so I don't know if anybody has any questions. Most of you are probably familiar with it.
And I feel compelled to put this in the curriculum. Primarily for my focus is just officer safety. It's not one of those courses where they need a foundation to draw from to understand the concept. We want them doing it from day one when they get into the field, instead of waiting till FTO and then getting the training. But I think there is also some statistics how it's reduced officer injury and even fatalities. So it's about that scene protection for the officers.
And Major Mason, do you know how long generally the course goes? I know I'm throwing you on the spot, and I greatly apologize.
It's either a 2 or a 4-hour course.
Okay.
Is it 4?
I think it's 4.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So with that information, the reason I threw it to Major Mason is because he has a little bit more information. I'm not a subject matter expert on this in any regards, so I apologize for that. But we would be requesting, Post would be requesting from the council an additional 4 hours to add this course, the TIMS, so that we can ensure the safety of our officers out on the roadway to our core curriculum. And we would need a vote on that to increase the hours. And we would be throwing it in our LEO, correct? Our LEO block is where we'd be adding it.
What is the additional cost for that for Post to add that for all new officers?
So it would be additional 4 hours. So, I mean, we may be extending our academy a slight bit. We can adjust.
35. Because it's only one instructor. You can actually put 100 people in a room and still it'd be effective.
Okay. And most of our instructors would luckily come from the Utah Air Patrol. So our costs would be down because they're great partners to work with, and they help us out. So
that's a hint.
It is a hand.
Noted.
So we would just need a vote to approve those additional hours or a motion to accept.
I'd like to.
Go ahead, Doctor.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the increased hours.
Second.
Got a motion from Janetta Williams and a second from Councilperson Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you so much.
If I may, Council, I'd like to make a couple comments regarding curriculum. I know over the past year or so, we've added quite a number of hours to the overall curriculum. In fact, we were at 588, now we're up to, I think, 637 right now. To give you a kind of an idea of where the curriculum is, you've been getting a lot of updates. Deputy Director Garcia and I went down to an IADLIS conference in Fort Worth, Texas. And, you know, as any conference, you can pick your titles, and there was one that was kind of appealing to us. It was regarding a research piece on curriculum and how to better manage your basic training. So we go there, and we're sitting there, and I lean over. I said, dude, we're already doing this. They're talking about integrated learning, integrated curriculum, and also evidence-based practices. With the team that we created with Marcus Yockey, Esquire, he hates it when I say that, and John Jacobs, who I think is working on his PhD in education, they've done a phenomenal job of putting this curriculum together. It's not done, but you should see some of the work. We have instructor guides that are like 80 pages, so anybody can read it and become an expert and teach it if they really need to. It's all research-based, but that piece of research that IADLIS is doing kind of further cemented the fact that we are ahead of the game. Now departments are endorsing this integrated learning theory, and we've already been doing it for about a year and a half now. So if you look at Utah and our curriculum and the number of hours, nationally, we are like right in the middle. And I'm just preparing you, probably over the course of the next couple of years, we're going to have to add considerable hours to this curriculum, especially as we research different ideas. You know, we've added duty to intervene training. I taught it with Lieutenant Newland the other day. It's about 2 hours. We probably need to double that class. So there's a lot of areas that the curriculum has been neglectful to, and we need to put it in the curriculum. But I anticipate over the next 3 to 4 years of getting closer to 700 hours, which I know administrators don't like to hear because that's just more time they're away from their departments that they're paying somebody benefits and salary. But I guarantee it will be a better product, and hopefully they're better prepared going into FTO. But that's for future, but I just wanted to plant that seed.
Director, are all the mandatory hours based on the legislation incorporated in current post, correct?
Yeah, correct. But the majority of it is with the initiative of this council, which is really cool. You guys have allowed the post staff to really kind of explore different topics and objectives to put into the basic training curriculum. But some of them, regarding basic, this council is it. In-service is legislatively mandated by 16 hours and some other topics, but when it comes to basic training curriculum, this body creates it. And that's a pretty awesome responsibility to have that we take very seriously. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Thanks for the reminder. Anything in addition? Any questions from council? With that, we'll go ahead and move toward disciplinary cases. Andrew, would you like to lead, please?
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman, members of the council. Our first case is Jordan Applenalp. Is Jordan, Ms. Applenalp here? Doesn't appear so. Ms. Applenalp is a dispatcher with Springville Police Department. The sustained allegation against her was for disorderly conduct that arose out of a guilty plea. In this case, Post is recommending a letter of caution, which is a downward deviation from the baseline 3-month suspension. And I'll kind of explain the basis for that as I go through the facts. This arose out of a domestic dispute between Jordan and her husband. It was investigated by Spanish Fork Police Department. And during that incident, there was a door that was damaged in the home. Based on Spanish Fork's investigation, they determined at the time that Jordan was the primary aggressor. She was arrested for criminal mischief with a domestic enhancement and domestic violence in the presence of a child, because there was a minor child present at the time. During the prosecution and the plea deal, the subsequent plea deal, I think there was two significant things that came out of that. First of all of the domestic violence enhancements attributes were dismissed, and it appears from post-investigation that Jordan's husband admitted that he had actually been the one that had damaged the door. And so Post's view is that there was a kind of a lack of evidence to support the allegation, and that it's basically based solely on the fact that she did enter into a plea deal. She waived her right to an administrative hearing, so she has admitted as true the facts in the notice of agency action.
Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, do I have a motion to accept Post's recommendation?
I move to accept Post's recommendation and issue a letter of caution.
Sheriff Sparks, a motion to accept. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second from Dr. Molly Sweeney. Any further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
The next case is Michael Bassarier. Mr. Bassarier, present.
Or your counsel.
Or counsel.
For the record, we see no one rising.
Okay. Mr. Bassarier was a post-applicant. He was not employed by a law enforcement agency. The sustained allegation is a willful falsification of information to obtain certification. He did not respond to the notice of agency action. A default was entered against him, and in this case, Post is recommending the baseline 2-year suspension. This willful falsification incident arose out of his application to attend basic training. He completed another application with an employment for a local police agency, and disclosed that he had used Adderall while in college in 2014 or 2015. The local agency compared the application that he submitted for employment with the application that he had submitted to Post, and found those discrepancies that he had not reported in his Post application. The Adderall use he had acknowledged. During his Post interview, he acknowledged that he did not that he intentionally failed to notify Post about that Adderall use, and again, an order of default was entered. So Post recommendation is 2-year suspension.
Any questions for counsel?
Hearing none, do I have a motion?
Make that motion.
Got a motion from Sheriff Curtis to accept Post recommendation.
Second.
Second from Ms. Williams. Do we have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
The next case, Annette Baugh. Counsel, we had a request from Ms. Baugh's attorney because he's got a conflict right now with a criminal sentencing hearing that he's actually handling in one of the conference rooms here. And he asked if he could move that to the end of the agenda. Post agreed to accommodate that. So if the counsel is okay with that and approves that, we'll move that toward the end.
That works.
The Baugh case. Okay, yep. Thank you. Sterling Black, then. We'll move on to Sterling Black. This is is Mr. Black or his counsel present? I'm seeing no. This is the sustained allegation in this case is also for willful falsification of information to obtain certification. It's also an applicant case. Mr. Black was not employed by any law enforcement agency, and Post's recommendation is the baseline 2-year suspension. The facts of the case are as follows. Sterling Black was investigated for willfully providing false information in his Post application. In 2018, he disclosed that he had engaged in bestiality and sexual abuse of a minor as a juvenile during a background investigation with the law enforcement agency that he was applying with. The application that he submitted to Post in 2020 did not disclose those incidents. And during the Garrity interview with Post, Mr. Black said that he intentionally withheld that information from his application so he could attend the academy, that he did not intentionally withhold that information, but that he may have done so subconsciously. He waived his right to a hearing before an ALJ and, again, stipulated to the facts in the notice as true.
Any questions for counsel?
Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
Motion to accept the two-year suspension.
I've got a motion to accept from John Crowley. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Sheriff Rigby. Any further discussion?
I do. There is a pattern here of quite a bit. Personally, I would say revocation is more along the lines because, like I said, it's gone on three different things in the last how many years of making poor decision making. So I would actually up it.
Would you like to make a substitute motion?
I would like to make a substitute motion for revocation.
Can I interject? For a category C, the top end is 3.5 years. So if you're going to
remember to explain about why you're deviating from the guidelines so we have it on record.
So make a motion based on the top end if that's what you want to do,
right,
and why you want to do that.
Well, I'd recommend 3 years to go to the top end because of the pattern of deception and poor decision making.
I have a motion from Travis Knorr for a 3.5 year suspension. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a second from Sheriff Curtis. Do we have any further discussion?
I do have one question I want to ask, and it's going to speak to another one. When we're discussing some of these, especially in this one, where it's a, it was never investigated, right? Those crimes, and that's what we're looking at. So while I agree wholeheartedly that this is somebody who want to be very careful about what we do with them, in the statement of facts, the question is that allowable for us to view, or should we be notified of what those facts are because, and should we take them into consideration? He was never charged, never investigated, simply just it was a pattern of not telling the truth on multiple incidents.
Reframe your question. So the question is, should we be considering information
that was never investigated, never charged? Should that information even be in the affidavit, right, if it's not something we can consider?
Well, in this instance, it's an application. So we're inquiring about behavior to determine whether they had a sound background and eligible to be an officer based on conduct. And most of that, probably 95% of that, is not investigated. We try to give you just enough information so you understand why it's falsifying the application, but not so much, because again, like you said, it has not been adjudicated. So yep. I'll leave that up to the attorney and the counsel.
I just had a comment. It seems to me in response to that although it wasn't investigated criminally, the notice of agency action did put the individual on notice of what the facts were, and he stipulated to the facts by signing a waiver. Would have had the opportunity to have it heard before an ALJ according to the rules of this council. So, in my opinion at least, and I'll defer to council, but I believe it's probably appropriate for him to say that.
He did it, and the one part that sometimes it feels like what we should just say is, look, there were multiple counts of not telling the truth. That's the aggravating factor. Just an observation.
Yeah,
details. And that's probably more appropriate because the only conduct that this board can take action on is the application or his actions while as an officer.
His failure to disclose the truth.
Right.
That's what we're looking at.
And these are, you know, adjusting to different types of counsels. In the past, the council has wanted a little more details. But we can most certainly revisit that if that's what the council would like and just stick to the violation itself and not the information surrounding it.
Sure. If there are in the notes of agency action, there are, but it does provide a little more detail in terms of those underlying kind of failures, the issues that arose that brought the failure to disclose. There's a little more detail than what I, my, you know, very quick summary provided.
I think it's helpful to understand both where the deception comes, what the deception is about, as well as the pattern of deception, not necessarily that's materially applicable as far as in the determination, but I think it can add some context, whether it's lying about drug usage or lying about sexual conduct. I think that could be a helpful perspective in kind of this amended way. But I agree. I think it's the pattern of behavior, as I heard it in the motion, was the pattern of deception within the behavior.
We got a first and a second
from Sheriff Curtis. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The motion passes. Thank you, counsel.
The next case is Brandon Burr. Is Mr. Burr or his counsel present? Apparently not. Mr. Burr was formerly with Wayne County Sheriff's Office. He resigned in July of 2021. The sustained allegation from Post was a BCI violation, and the recommendation here is a 9-month suspension, which is an upward deviation from the baseline 6-month suspension. And the reason for that is because there were multiple offenses. This was the BCI violation in this case was revolved around December 17th, 2020 and January 4th, 2021 access by Mr. Burr of protected information relating to his wife's ex-husband and some people associated with the ex-husband using USAGIS. Wayne County Sheriff's Office sustained a policy violation. There were no criminal charges filed. Mr. Burr admitted to accessing that information during a Garrity interview with Post and with his local agency. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered.
Any questions for counsel?
Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
I'd move for the recommended action.
Got a motion from Sheriff Rigby. Do I have a second?
A second.
Second from Major Mason. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
The next case is Nicholas Bushell. Mr. Bushell present? The sustained allegation in this case against Mr. Bushell was for falsification of a government record. Post is recommending a 2-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from the 1-year baseline because of multiple instances. Mr. Bushell waived his right to an ALJ hearing. The facts are as follows. Regarding the falsified government records, the first involved a protective order case. Mr. Bushell documented that a photo of a suspect vehicle was unavailable. However, in footage from his body-worn camera, the reporting party can be heard telling Mr. Bushell that a blurry photo was available. In the Garrity interview with Post, Mr. Bushell said that he documented that the photo was unavailable because he thought that it did not contain any evidentiary value. There was a second incident involving a domestic violence case. Mr. Bushell documented that the victim would not provide her information or describe the incident. Footage from his body-worn camera showed that the victim provided that requested information. In Garrity interviews with his agency, Mr. Bushell said he provided false information because he did not want the reports to be returned to him by his superior. He resigned prior to the completion of Post's the agency's administrative investigation, and in an interview with Post, Bushell admitted to providing that false information in those two cases. And again, Mr. Bushell waived his right to a hearing and stipulated to the facts in the notice. And Mr. Bushell, it looks like he was here with counsel, so I'll turn the time over to them.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Nicholas Bushell. I just wanted to apologize for being here. And I appreciate what everything Post has done. And I hope that you guys accept the 2-year recommendation.
Any questions from counsel? Legal counsel, you have anything in addition? All right. Hearing no further questions, do I have a motion?
Motion to accept 2 years.
Got a motion to accept from John Crowley.
Second.
Got a second from Sheriff Sparks. Any further discussion?
What day is that effective? What date would we usually use?
That would be from the time he was actually
7/1 of 21, wouldn't it? 7/1 of 21. Is that correct?
Yeah, July 1st of 2021 was the separation date. That would start the time served. The investigator is correcting me and saying that would actually start the date that he was put on paid administrative leave, so June 23rd, so a week or so difference, June 23rd of 21.
Any questions for counsel? That we had a motion and a second. We had the vote, if I'm not mistaken. Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Oh, sorry, I voted. Apologize. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Alex Chambers. Is Mr. Chambers present? You want to just come stand here again? I'll kind of go through the facts and then give you a chance to discuss. Mr. Chambers is employed by the Department of Corrections. The sustained allegation was for taking protected wildlife and allowing wildlife to spoil. In this case, Post's recommendation is a letter of caution, which is a downward deviation from the 6-month baseline, and the reason for that is that there was the minimal nature of the offense and the fact that he quickly self-reported that taking. The facts of the case are as follows. Mr. Chambers purchased a spike-only elk hunting permit but killed a bull elk that he thought was a spike. Upon closer inspection, he noticed the elk was a 2x2 and would not be considered a spike. He left the carcass where he killed it and did not take any meat, thinking that would be a further violation if he did take the meat. He self-reported the incident to state investigators, provided the coordinates, the GPS coordinates for the location of the carcass. They found that the meat was spoiled and unusable. Investigators did. They reported that the points on the antlers were very small and would have been hard to notice unless viewed up close. Due to the circumstances, the investigator said that if the meat had not spoiled, they likely would not have issued a citation. Mr. Chambers waived his right to an ALJ hearing and admitted to the facts in the notice.
Any questions for counsel?
Mr. Chambers, would you like to address?
Hi, my name is Alex Chambers. I just wanted to be here present so you guys could see who I am and see the facts of the case stated, which was accurate and true. And just so you guys have a face to connect to the incident.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Chambers? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Show for the record that Travis Knorr is going to recuse himself for a conflict.
That's a train.
All right. Or earthquake, whatever.
40 hours of non-paid leave.
I have a motion to accept the post recommendation. Is that correct?
Yes.
And a second. The motion was from Melina Stevens, and the second was from Janetta Williams. Any further discussion?
So a point of clarification there, where it's on the letter of caution, is that right?
Correct. And that is the minimum we can, that's the minimum we can take for the record. So we got a first and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Thank you.
Counsel, the Michael Clark case is another one where his attorney has asked if we could put that toward the end for the same reason, if that's okay with the chairman and counsel.
That'd be fine.
Okay. We'll move on to Regina Dietrich then. Is Ms. Dietrich present? It appears that she is not.
Is counsel present? I see no one rising. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Dietrich was formerly employed by the Department of Corrections, left in or separated in December of 2021. The sustained allegation is a DUI. It arose out of a utility vehicle accident. Post is recommending a two-year suspension in this case, which is an upward deviation from the baseline 1 year. And the reason for that is that she was over two times the legal limit and that there was an accident involved. The brief facts of the DUI are that Ms. Dietrich had consumed multiple alcoholic beverages prior to driving her utility task vehicle on a public street. While driving the UTV, she hit a parked car and rolled the UTV. When she asked for her driver's license, Dietrich presented her badge instead of the driver's license. Due to the injury, potential injuries from the crash, she was not asked to perform standardized field sobriety tests, but she did blow into a preliminary breath test, which showed a result of 0.17, and later took an intoxilizer test that showed a breath alcohol of level of 0.207. She was charged with DUI, pled guilty to an amended charge of impaired driving as a Class B misdemeanor. She admitted in her Garrity interview and her post, in her Garrity interviews with her agency and with Post, that she had been drinking and driving the UTV on a public road and that she hit the parked car. She was placed on admin leave in October of 2021, and then resigned in December of 2021. She waived her rights to an ALJ hearing and admitted to the facts in the notice.
Any questions for counsel?
Just to clarify this as well, it's from the date of the paid leave, so the October 25 date, or is this the retired?
The paid leave. 12 months,
correct.
I need to recuse myself again.
For the record,
Mr. Knorr is going to recuse himself again for conflict. Thank you. Any questions for counsel? Hearing nothing.
Further, I'll call for a vote.
Move
a motion,
accept.
Rather. Motion to accept. Sheriff Sparks.
Second.
Second from Chief Silk. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Michael Duncan. You Mr. Duncan?
Yep.
Hi. Okay, great. So I will go through the brief facts and then give you an opportunity to respond. Mr. Duncan's still employed with Department of Corrections. This is also a waste of wildlife case, and Post is recommending a letter of caution in lieu of the six-month baseline suspension because of the minimal nature of the offense and no intent to waste the wildlife. This was a case where Mr. Duncan legally harvested a deer. He removed portions of the deer that he thought were safe to keep and disposed of the remaining portions of the deer carcass by placing them in a dumpster. He was cited for waste of wildlife by a state law enforcement agency, pled guilty to the charge with the plea held in abeyance. He was never placed on administrative leave, received an eight-hour suspension without pay, and Mr. Duncan waived his right to the ALJ hearing and admitted to the facts in the notice. give you an opportunity to respond to the council.
Yeah, I just want to apologize for my negligence. I definitely will never do anything like this again, for sure.
Any questions? Thank you. For the record, Director Knorr is going to recuse himself on this one for conflict. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion. We accept the post recommendation.
Got a motion to accept from Sheriff Curtis. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Dr. Sween. Do I have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
The next case is Russell Flanagan. Is Mr. Flanagan present, or his counsel? It appears that he is not. Mr. Flanagan's case, Mr. Flanagan was formerly employed with the Department of Corrections. He was terminated in June of 2021 based on a sustained allegation of aggravated assault. And in this case, Mr. Flanagan did not respond to the notice. Post is recommending the baseline revocation. This case involved an incident of aggressive driving with another vehicle. During that incident, Mr. Flanagan drew his firearm and pointed it at the other driver in the car. The other driver was able to photograph Mr. Flanagan with the weapon and reported the incident to local police. The police contacted Flanagan. He initially denied drawing the firearm or pointing it, but when told there was evidence, he admitted that he drew the weapon and pointed it at the other driver. He was charged and pled guilty to aggravated assault, a third-degree felony. He did not participate in the post investigation, and as I mentioned, he did not respond to the notice of agency action, and default was entered against him.
Any questions for counsel?
Hearing none, for the record, Director Knorr will recuse himself. Do I have a motion?
I move to accept.
I have a motion to accept from Sheriff Rigby. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Second from John Crowley. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thanks, counsel.
Chase Godfrey. Is Mr. Godfrey or his attorney present? Appears not. Mr. Godfrey is employed as a dispatcher with Davis County Sheriff's Office. The sustained allegation was for an unlawful purchase, possession, or consumption of alcohol by a minor. Post is recommending a 3-month suspension, which is a downward deviation from the 1-year baseline because of the fact that he was nearly 21 at the time and the minimal nature and evidence in this case. This was an incident where Mr. Godfrey had declined to work an optional cover shift for a coworker. He was not called into work. It was an optional shift, but when he came into the work the next day, he did tell another coworker that he did not work the shift because he had consumed alcohol. The supervisor overheard Mr. Godfrey and connected the fact that he was not yet 21, and that was the basis of that allegation. Mr. Godfrey waived his right to an ALJ hearing and again admitted the facts of the notice as true.
Any questions for counsel? For the record, Sheriff Sparks is recusing himself.
And I also wanted to...
we have a letter from Sheriff Sparks. It's in your packet, I believe. Want to take a moment to read that, or counsel, if you'd like to read it.
I'm fine either way, Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead. Please read it.
This is a letter from Sheriff Sparks. Dear Post Counsel, the Davis County Sheriff's Office has a dispatcher, Chase Godfrey, who will be before the Post Counsel for possible sanction of his dispatcher certification. I am writing this letter to offer my support for Chase and to ask for appropriate consideration in this case. Chase was hired in April of 2021, and he has proven to be a model employee and dispatcher. He is consistent, reliable, honest, and forthright. Chase is a valuable employee. He works well with his coworkers and displays a positive attitude each day he is at work. In January, our dispatch center had a need to fill an overtime shift, a situation that has become all too common. Chase had been working many overtime shifts and was called personally to ask if he could fill the shift. Because he had consumed alcohol, Chase wisely said that he was unable to work that shift. The following day, Chase told another dispatcher that he was unable to work the shift because he had consumed an alcoholic beverage. Chase was under 21 years old at the age of age at the time. During a subsequent internal investigation, Chase was immediately and completely honest about what happened. There was never a concern that he was being deceptive. Chase was placed on corrective action and to date has complied with all expectations of that corrective action. Although I'm concerned about the violation of this status offense and do not excuse the behavior, I am pleased that Chase made a sound decision in not attempting to drive or work after consuming alcohol. I appreciate his honesty and his demonstrated remorse. I believe Chase has learned an important lesson, and I believe he is an asset to public safety in our county. I would like to request leniency from the council. The Sheriff's Office plans to retain Chase as an employee and work through any disciplinary action taken. Thank you for your consideration.
Thanks, counsel. Any questions for legal? Do I have a motion?
Make a motion to accept post recommendation for 3-month suspension.
You got a motion to accept from Chief Silk to accept post recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second. Was that Melina Stevens? Yeah, from Melina Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you, counsel.
The next case is Jeffrey Grundell. Mr. Grundell. You kind of understand the drill. I'll present the facts and then give you an opportunity to address the council. Mr. Grundell's case, he was employed by Salt Lake City Police Department. The sustained allegation arose out of a DUI, driving under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or a combination of both. In this case, Post is recommending a 1.5-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from the baseline 1 year. And the reasons for that is that he was on duty at the time of the DUI and that there was a traffic accident involved. A brief summary of the facts are that Mr. Grundell was investigated by a local police agency for DUI. The investigation disclosed that Mr. Grundell was on duty driving his marked patrol car when he drifted off the road, made contact with a tree, causing minor damage to his vehicle. He was contacted by officers. There was suspected impairment due to his speech and poor motor skills. He also performed poorly on the standard field sobriety tests. Mr. Grundell was arrested and consented to a blood draw. The results of the blood draw showed lorazepam in Mr. Grundell's blood. The charge of DUI was dismissed. During a Garrity interview with Post, sorry, I'm trying to go high technology here and sometimes it backfires. Mr. Grundell said that he had an alcohol, this was during the Garrity interview with Post, he said that he had an alcohol addiction that had caused him to enter a rehabilitation center. As part of the treatment, he was prescribed some pills to help with the alcohol and anxiety. Mr. Grundell had been back at work for approximately 3 months when the doctor changed his medication. As he was getting ready for work, he unintentionally took his wife's lorazepam instead of his new medication. Mr. Grundell did not know that he had ingested lorazepam until the blood results returned. He said he did not remember much about what happened that day, but admitted he was not safe to operate a vehicle. He waived his right to an administrative law judge hearing and stipulated the facts in the notice. And I'll turn the time over to Mr. Grundell and his counsel.
Counsel, if I could, I just wanted to give you a couple of additional details. My name is obviously, it's Lindsay Jarvis for those that I haven't met. In this case, Mr. Grundell actually has 18.5 years. And at the time of this offense, he was working as a sergeant. He had done his time with Salt Lake City Police Department, but then when the agencies changed the airport was reassigned, he was actually put on a 12-month probationary period in spite of all the time that he had done. So when the allegation came forward, he was put on administrative leave, he was actually terminated as a result of that probationary status. The other issue is in regards to the accident. What had happened is a tree branch had actually struck his side mirror. So there was no other individuals that were hurt on this. It was just damage that was done to his vehicle. and then obviously as a result of this, we were able to get the charges dismissed. He ended up pleading to a negligent collision on this one. There was ample evidence that he did not know that he had consumed the medication. His wife and his pills were in the same location, and they have the little, we call them a pill hotel. So they put the pills into the section, and he unbeknownst put her pill in. And so when he started feeling the side effects of this event, he actually had pulled over and then was completely honest with everyone involved as far as post goes. But he did not know until we got the blood results back what he had actually consumed. And so for about 3 days, he was unable to communicate and didn't know what had happened. And we weren't able to put the pieces together until the toxicology results came back.
Counsel, my name is Jeff Grendel. My presence here today is my attempt to take responsibility for the actions that I did myself. It's one of the biggest regrets of my life. The end result of my life has changed dramatically, and I realize that the authority and the responsibility that was entrusted to me, regardless of the fact I did not intend to do this, I did not know it happened, it doesn't change the responsibility that it was negligent, and I'm aware of that. And I need to make certain that nothing like that can ever happen again. And it's difficult to stand before you, but this is my attempt to take responsibility.
Nothing else from post, Chairman.
Counsel, do we know what the level of the diazepam was?
We're not sure.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for counsel?
Sounds like counsel may have the answer to that question.
Please, counsel.
The toxicology result indicated that he was within a therapeutic level, and we're assuming that he took one of those pills.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any further questions? Hearing none, I'll ask for a motion.
Motion to accept, post counsel.
I have a motion to accept from John Crowley. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Janetta Williams. Do I have any further discussion?
So based on the separation date, would he be then eligible to reapply based on the 1.5-year suspension? And this being in January 22nd, 2020?
Yes, it would be from the date of, that's correct. He would be eligible. Any further questions?
So he's eligible now.
So you're eligible now. Would be the
highest guess.
Okay. Any further questions? Go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
The next case is Hunter Hawks. Is Mr. Hawks? Here's Mr. Hawks, and his counsel are present. Mr. Hawks is employed by the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. This is an official misconduct case, and in this case, Post is recommending a letter of caution, which is a downward deviation from the 6-month baseline. And I'll kind of explain the grounds for that as I go through the facts of the case. Mr. Hawks was investigated by his agency for policy violations that amounted to official misconduct. The investigation disclosed that Mr. Hawks was stopped by a police officer for a window tint violation. He told the officer that he was an off-duty deputy and that his windows were tinted because he uses his personal vehicle to perform work duties. The officer did not believe Hawks, contacted Mr. Hawks' supervisor, who stated that Hawks did not have authorization. He used his personal vehicle for work duties. He was given a citation for the window tint violation, which I believe was a fix-it ticket. During the Garrity interview with his agency and with Post, he admitted to telling the officer that he uses his personal vehicle for work purposes. He said that his intent was to get out of a ticket, but he said that he did use his personal vehicle for work purposes. although he did not have authorization to do so. He knew that his window tint was darker than allowed by law and said that it was a stupid decision. He waived his right to an administrative law judge hearing and stipulated to the facts in the notice of agency action. And I'll let Mr. Hawks or his counsel address.
Good morning, Council. Clay Alger on behalf of Mr. Hawks. All I want to say is we believe the recommendation is appropriate, and we stipulate to that, and we'll leave it to the Council. But before we do that, Mr. Hawks wanted to make a statement as well.
Good morning, Council. My name is Hunter Hawks. I want to first apologize to Post and Salt Lake County Sheriff's Department for my actions. I'm disappointed and embarrassed at myself. It's been a life-changing mistake. Although I have learned from it, given the opportunity or, have a similar circumstance happen again, I definitely would handle it differently. I would, speak less, not make excuses, and that's what I did in this situation, and I take full accountability. It was a mistake on my part. And I just ask you, go with the recommended, the post recommendation for the certification. Thank you. Sorry. Letter of caution. Yeah, sorry. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Hawks?
Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
Make the motion we accept the post recommendation for letter of caution for Hunter Hawks.
I've got a motion to accept from Chief Silk. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Dr. Sween. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Hawks.
Bart Henniger. Is Mr. Henniger or his counsel present? Morning. Here's that is a no. Mr. Henniger was formerly employed by the Department of Corrections. He was placed on leave in June of 2021 and then terminated in September of 2021. The sustained allegation here is a violation of GRAMA, the Governmental Records Access and Management Act. The Post is recommending a 9-month suspension, an upward deviation from the baseline 6-month suspension, and that's because there were multiple offenses in this case. The violation of GRAMA arose out of Mr. Henniger providing inmate housing locations and criminal histories, specifically whether an inmate was a sex offender or not, to other inmates. He admitted during his UDC and post-Garrity interviews that he had obtained inmates' housing locations and whether those specific inmates were sex offenders or not, and shared that information with other inmates under his supervision. He said that he was trying to build a rapport with the inmates under his supervision. The county attorney's office filed 5 counts of violating GRAMA. Those were dismissed without prejudice. He waived his right to an administrative law judge hearing and stipulated to the facts in the notice.
For the record, Director Norris recused himself. Do we have any questions for counsel?
So as far as the law goes here, I understand it's a Class B misdemeanor.
That's correct.
Violation. And so, and it's, grandma's, there's lots of parts to it. And as far as this piece, it's qualified or classified as protected information.
So this information, Sheriff, was either private or protected under GRAMA. It was certainly non-public. Apparently, with UDC, although some of this information could have been accessed through UCGIS and making it a BCI violation, apparently with corrections, that this information was maintained on their internal record-keeping system, and so it was not accessed through the UCGIS portal, making it a BCI violation. That's why the Post went considered it a GRAMA, because it was non-public information, either private or protected.
Overall, and I don't know if it's more of a discussion point on another time,
for the council. I wonder if this is the first time that the council's considered a grammar violation. Overall, yeah, to me, grammar is just a point of discussion. Has to do with openness and transparency and being that way with the public and not hiding things. At least that's overall the general feeling of grammar. And to take conduct and to fit it into a grammar violation, which really, to me, sharing information about housing, I just wonder about why we're using grammar to accomplish that. Is it not something that's for the department to work through? Are we really going to make sharing housing information a grammar violation, as though someone potentially could ask for it through a grammar request? There's more questions here.
Sex offender information, is that correct? Yes. So that would be the part I think would fall more to the grammar side of it. I think
in my mind, because I talked to the director last night because I had the same or similar question. I would see the first half as a policy violation on housing. Second half is a grammar violation based on protected information of a sex offender. Or maybe it's not. I don't know if it's public. I guess that's the other question. So that would be the...
Definitely not through BCI. It's through OTRAC.
Yeah.
Which the rules are very different.
But also, OTRAC can be accessed through UC just as well. So he's still getting the same information. And if we had somebody come before us that accessed it through UCGIS,
that'd be clear.
We would take action on that individual in some fashion. So it's still protected information for most law enforcement officers, and that's their only access is through UCGIS. Aside from, I believe, Department of Corrections has access directly to OTRAC, not tied to UCGIS.
Correct. There might be some, as a point of discussion, there might be some usefulness if this is the first time that the council is considering a grammar violation and how that can affect or conduct that underlies and whether that can affect their licensing. I understand we do have some obligation to make the action, take the action, and then remain consistent through that. But we might also want to consider not aggravating, not taking the conduct and aggravating it above the baseline, but making it a point for all of the corrections officers and law enforcement officers with something like a letter of caution.
Well, I think that it's still a Class B misdemeanor. So
it was dismissed.
It was not charged, but it was still conduct that constituted Class B misdemeanor. Whether it was dismissed or not, it's still that conduct still comes before the board. And then whether with the change in the law, whether it involves dishonesty or deception, based upon if he was supposed to share it with his policy or not supposed to share it, how protected is that? Is it permissible for a correctional officer to say, provide information on another inmate? Is that a security risk? Does that increase the risk to the inmate himself? Does it security in the thing? I think because it is a Class B misdemeanor, that it should fit the baseline and follow the conditions that are. Whether you want to deviate from that based upon what the allegation was, that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. But it still should not be an adjusted baseline because it still is a Class B misdemeanor.
Sure, just to piggyback on Rich's comment, it may be useful for if the council, if I just read the statute, the grandma criminal penalty statute, because some may not understand that violation of grandma can actually be a criminal, a Class B misdemeanor. So in 63 G2 108, subsection 1A, a public employee or other person who has lawful access to any private, controlled or protected record under this chapter and who intentionally discloses, provides a copy of, or improperly uses a private, controlled, or protected record, knowing that the disclosure or use is prohibited under this chapter, is, with exceptions, guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. So that's the framework, the legal statute that governs this. So, and you know.
So could we be more specific as to what information is protected? Is it the housing information? Is it the criminal history part? Is it the sex offender status? What is it that we're actually identifying as protected or private?
That would be up to the agency.
Can the agency provide a specific designation for those?
The agency sustained a formal violation on their investigation. And OTRAC, when you sign in, it has a very similar sign-in to BCI access where it's telling you these records and information is protected just like a BCI. Like when I read it, I thought it was a BCI, but all of them, that pops up every time they sign in. So
your understanding is it was protected?
It is protected. It's just that it's going through their in-house system instead of through BCI. A lot of the information is pointed out is similar to the BCI information, and the employees know that it's protected.
Ms. Williams?
Excuse me. I would also just like to say, to me, it would be protected as well, because he had said that the reason why he had obtained that information was to gain more or less friendship, maybe. But in that capacity, he's not there to be friends with them. And I think all of this should be taken into consideration. I agree with what the recommendation has been said here, has posted here, because that privacy should be privacy, and that he's in a position where it's not up to him to try to get that information and give it to whoever it is. And it's just not the way that it should be done. And so I would recommend that we go with the recommendation by the post.
Thanks, Ms. Williams. I had another question from Major Mason.
I just would speak to the action that Post is suggesting, just because I think his actions while on duty could have potentially put those inmates in harm's way, the potential for retaliation or harm due to the nature of their offenses. Sharing that criminal history, I think, is an aggravator.
Spence?
Well, and I think the baseline is 6 months. It's only gone up 3 months. So to 9 months, and actually since he resigned last year, I think he's eligible right now. So it's not going to really effectively make a difference whether it's 6 months or 9 months.
Further discussion? Anything additional?
I would just comment that all of his case, and what Chair Ferguson is saying, is we need to be thinking forward, right, about other cases that may come to us and all. This one is specifically about the OTRAC system. In each of our agencies, we have protected records, whether it's ongoing investigations or investigations that are have a need to be held confidential. We all have those records that are protected, and I think we need to be able to protect the security of those records from the release of those who have access through our records management systems or through their daily work.
And it could differ from department to department. Right.
Yeah. Council, any additional summary?
That's all we have. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, unless there's any further questions, I'll call for the motion.
Make the motion to accept the recommendation.
I have a motion from Ms. Williams to accept the post recommendation. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
So I have a second from Spence Austin. Do we have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One, for the record, Sheriff Rigby votes against. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. The next case is Kyle Hunt. Mr. Hunt, it appears, is not present, nor is his attorney. Mr. Hunt was also formerly with Department of Corrections. This was a DUI case. That was the sustained allegation from Post, and Post is recommending the baseline 1-year suspension. A brief summary of those facts is that, that Mr. Hunt was stopped for a traffic violation. The officer observed clues indicating that Mr. Hunt may be intoxicated. The standardized field sobriety test showed multiple signs of impairment. Mr. Hunt took a breath alcohol test, which measured his alcohol level at 0.075. He was arrested and charged with DUI and a traffic violation. Mr. Hunt waived his right to an ALJ hearing and admitted to the, or stipulated to the facts in the notice.
Thanks, counsel. For the record, Director Knorr is going to recuse himself. Do we have any questions for counsel?
That was my agency that made the case.
We also have Sheriff Curtis is recusing himself for the record. Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll call for the motion. Oral motion.
Motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept from Major Mason. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Melina Stevens. Do I have any further conversation? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. The next case is David Jorgensen.
Mr. Jorgensen, or his counsel present? It appears not. Mr. Jorgensen was, or is, I'm sorry, is employed with the Department of Corrections. This is an allegation involving the taking, transporting, selling, or purchasing protected wildlife. And I'm just I'm being informed by the investigator that Mr. Jorgensen had a family commitment that he wanted to be here but was unable to attend, and asked that I pass that on to the council. This was a case where Mr. Jorgensen was investigated for unlawful taking of an animal. The investigation disclosed that he had taken had a cow elk tag and shot an elk that he believed was a cow elk, but afterwards realized it was a bull elk. Mr. Jorgensen immediately reported the violation to the local police agency. He was issued an infraction citation for the violation. He paid the citation. During his Garrett interview, he said that he was hunting and shot an elk. He was very confident that it was a cow, but when he got to the elk, he realized it was a bull. He immediately reported the violation, and Mr. Jorgensen waived his right to an ALJ hearing, stipulated to the facts, and Post is recommending, based on the self-reporting and the mistake, and recommending a letter of caution in lieu of the three-month baseline.
Thank you, counsel. For the record, Director Nora will recuse himself. Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
Move to accept the recommendation.
I've got a motion to accept from Sheriff Sparks. Go ahead, second.
Second.
Second from Ms. Williams. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, counsel.
Next.
Thank you. The next case is Mr. Killian, Spencer Killian. Here's Mr. Killian is here with his counsel, and I apologize. This was a late entry into the on the agenda, and so I'm looking for the statement of the facts. This was a generally the case. Apologize. Bear with me just a minute.
Would you like my copy?
Oh.
But they don't have this.
Yeah. The recommendation. I need the recommendations. Thank you. Mr. Killian was employed by Payson Police Department. The facts of this case involve a dishonest conduct in violation of department policy. Specifically, on June 22nd, 2021, Mr. Killian contacted his supervisor stating that he would not be able to work his shift the following day because he was sick. Later, Mr. Killian Sargent learned that he had tested for employment with a different agency that day. He was contacted and warned not to use sick leave if he was not sick. June 24th, 2021, Killian Sargent called Mr. Killian into his office and spoke with him again about not using sick leave time if he was not sick. The sergeant then asked Mr. Killian if he truly had been sick the previous day and was told yes, that he had. Mr. Killian was warned multiple times by his supervisor not to record sick time or sick leave on his time card if he was not, in fact, sick. When approving the time cards, the same sergeant saw that Mr. Killian had indeed documented sick leave on the day that he had tested with the different agency. Mr. Killian resigned in lieu of termination and refused to participate in the post investigation. He waived his right to a hearing before the administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts in the notice. And the recommendation in this case is 6 months, which is the baseline for that violation. I'll turn the, unless there's questions.
Any questions for counsel? If not, we'll turn it over to Mr. Killian or counsel.
Good morning, counsel. I'm Spencer Killian, and I apologize for my presence today, and I request that you accept the post recommendation of 6 months.
Any questions for Mr. Killian? Counsel, do you have anything in addition? Thank you.
Nothing for post.
No summary. Do I have a motion?
Motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept from Director Noor. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Sheriff Rigby. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. The next case is Desmond Perkins. Mr. Perkins? If you just stand here, I'll provide the facts and then give you an opportunity to respond to the council. Mr. Perkins was formerly with Layton Police Department and North Ogden Police Department. The sustained violation is deceptive conduct in violation of department policy. He waived his right to an administrative law hearing, and post is recommending the baseline 6 month suspension. A brief summary of the facts are that on December 15th, 2021, Mr. Perkins reported that he had accidentally discharged his ECD earlier that day. The information on the ECD showed that the discharge happened the day before Perkins made the report. During a Garrity interview, Perkins said that he did not want to get in trouble because he waited to make the report until the next day for the accidental discharge, so he misled and said that the discharge happened on the day that he made the report. His department found that he intentionally misled his supervisor about when that ECD was discharged, and maintained a policy violation for that. And again, Mr. Perkins waived his right to a hearing and stipulated to those facts.
Good morning, counsel. My name is Desmond Perkins. I apologize for this. I'm truly sorry to Layton City Police Department and Post Council. I remember the ethics training from Sheriff Sparks, and I clearly violated that, and I hope that you do accept the six-month recommendation.
Any questions for Mr. Perkins? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion. Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, there's a letter. Let's go ahead. Counsel, you might read it.
A letter from Chief Quinney in this case, too, that I was not aware of. Would you like me to read it?
If you don't mind.
Okay, thank you. Dear Post Council, on June 29th, 2022, you will be hearing the post-investigation case regarding the certification of Desmond Perkins. In the fall of 2021, Desmond had an incident while employed by Layton City Police Department. This is the focus of your investigation. The North Ogden Police Department hired Desmond in February of 2022. During the hiring process, Desmond was 100% forthcoming with us regarding this incident while employed by Layton City. It was our understanding that Desmond humbly answered to his poor decision and was appropriately disciplined by Layton City Police Department. While Desmond has been wearing the North Ogden PD uniform and badge, he has shown nothing but professionalism, honor, and top-notch customer service. He understands the authority granted him by the badge and in no way uses it for anything other than upholding the oath that he took when we pinned the badge on him. Given the lack of people these days that display the character required to do our job, it would be a shame for us to lose Desmond, even for a few months. I know you had a difficult job to do, and respect the decision you make regarding Desmond's fate. Thank you for your consideration and for all that you do for this truly noble profession. And I'll just add, when Chief Quinney mentions the discipline by Layton City Police Department, I think he was, did he get three?
He got 3 days.
3 days unpaid leave while he was with Layton before he joined North Ogden. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're currently employed by North Ogden, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Are you working currently?
Yes, sir.
So you're currently working. Okay, you have not been suspended, is that correct?
Not with North Ogden. With Layton during the incident, I was suspended 3 days without pay.
Thank you for that clarification. Any further questions? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
I'll make the motion to accept Bo's recommendation of a 3 month suspension.
Bro, how? You said 3 months or 6 months?
Oh, 6 months, sorry. 6 months.
I have a motion to accept Bo's counsel recommendation for 6 month suspension. Do I have a second?
Second, sir.
I have a second from Sheriff Rigby. Any further discussion?
When will that start?
That would start today if he's currently employed.
Minus 3 days.
Minus 3 days. Okay, thank you. Any further questions? I'll call for a vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Desmond.
The next case is Kimberly Plata. Ms. Plata or her attorney present? Nope. Ms. Plata was formerly with Salt Lake City Police Department. The sustained allegation is for willful falsification of information to obtain certification and lying under Garrity about marijuana use. The baseline is revocation, and that's what Post is recommending in this case. This was a case where she was investigated for, the investigation disclosed that in November of 2020, Ms. Plata applied to attend the basic training at a satellite academy where she had received her SFO certification, her special functions certification. She documented a single marijuana use in 2016 at that time. In November of 2021, Ms. Plata submitted a second application to attend basic training. In that application, she documented marijuana use in 2016 and 2018. Ms. Plata participated in two Garrity interviews with Post. In the first interview, she said that she had ingested a marijuana edible in 2016 and smoked marijuana in 2018. She said she did not remember using marijuana in 2018 until she was taking classes in basic training. Ms. Plata was instructed at the beginning of basic training to notify her academy director or Post if any information on her application changed. Plata stated that she did not notify anyone of that change in information. During a second Garrity interview, Ms. Plata explained that she had been in a leadership role for a local agency's Explorer program, and while in that program, she had used marijuana. She said that she remembered she had used marijuana prior to completing her 2020 Post application, but was embarrassed to put the 2018 marijuana use on the application, because she had been in the Explorer program at the time she used. And that, of course, was different than the information that she had provided during her first Garrity interview. So those were the two, the willful falsification and lying under Garrity. And again, Post is recommending revocation.
Any questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
I do have a question.
Please.
Is it the line under Garrity that makes it a Category A?
That would be, yes. The willful falsification would be a two-year, either D or E.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have a motion?
I move to accept.
Motion to accept. Sheriff Sparks, do I have a second?
Second
from Ms. Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Thanks, counsel. Next.
Scott Russell.
Is it?
And I know Scott
Jacob
Russell
Romero?
Is.
Jacob Romero is next, I think.
Oh, Romero. That's another one that's not on my. Oh, boy. Here we go again, huh?
Jacob Romero, or your counsel, are you present? He is here. For the record, Mr. Romero is here. Do you have counsel present? Thank you. For the record, Director Nora will recuse himself.
Yeah, so Mr. Romero is employed by the Department of Corrections. The allegation is, the sustained allegation is for reckless driving. In this case, Post is recommending a letter of caution in lieu of the 6-month suspension based on Post's determination that the allegations do not match the conduct. Mr. Romero was cited for speeding. The prosecutor who reviewed the citation amended the charge to reckless driving. Mr. Romero pled guilty to the charge of reckless driving, and his plea was to be held in abeyance. During the Garrity interviews, Romero admitted to driving above the posted speed limit and waived his right to an administrative law judge hearing in that case. So Post recommendation, again, is for a letter of caution in lieu of the 6-month baseline.
Any questions? Do you have any statement for Post, counsel?
Just that I understand that as law enforcement, we're held to a higher standard, and that's what I will uphold moving forward. Nothing other than that.
Any questions? Thank you. Hearing none, I will go ahead and call for a motion.
Recommendation. Captain Crowley, a motion to accept. Got a second. Sheriff Curtis, second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Council.
All right, thank you. And I apologize again for those couple of late entries that were not on my list. I know we've got a lot to go through, so we'll try to move through these. Mr. Russell, Scott Russell, I know is here with Mr. Evershed. Mr. Russell was formerly. Okay. Do you want to address that now or wait till I go through the facts? Address the council now. I know there's going to be a request for that we close the session due to some mental health topics.
Absolutely. So because we're going to be getting into health concerns under the statute 524204, we would just ask that this session be closed. And we understand that there's probably still some more after this. If it's more convenient for the council to cover those other ones and then return to this, we're happy to address it now.
Where would you like to go with? Do we have some other ones we can cover right now and then jump back to this?
Happy to do that.
Let's do that. We'll move forward and then okay. And then come back. That'd be great. Thank you. Let's go to the next.
Scott Sultz. Is Mr. Sultz present or his counsel? It appears not. Mr. Sultz was not employed by any law enforcement agency at the time of this investigation. There are two sustained allegations. One is for electronic communications harassment, and the second is for taking transport and selling of purchasing protected wildlife, and those are two completely separate, unrelated incidents. In this case, the baseline would be 1 year. Post is recommending 1.5 years, 1.5 years, based on the multiple charges. The first, with respect to the wildlife violation. This was in October of 2020. Mr. Sultz was investigated by two separate police agencies for catching a fish with live bait in an area where only artificial lures were allowed, and also electronic communication harassment. The first investigation disclosed that Sultz was observed using a worm to fish at a lake that only allowed artificial lures. He was issued a citation. The second related to Mr. Sultz sending multiple text messages and multiple phone calls to his ex-girlfriend, attempting to get property and money that he believed that she owed to him. Mr. Sultz was told by his ex-girlfriend to stop calling him, and she reported his actions to a local agency. On a later date, Mr. Sultz contacted his ex-girlfriend again, demanding money that she owed him. Sultz was charged with one count of electronic communication harassment. He entered a guilty plea to be held in abeyance on that electronic communication harassment charge, and paid a fine for the citation that he received for the fishing with the live bait. During the Garrity interview, he admitted essentially to both of those violations, failed to respond to a notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered by the administrative law judge. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions, counsel?
Do we need to have any discussion? Is there any acknowledgement about whether this needs to be consecutive or concurrent? There's two charges, and whether in time they...
This is the first case that I've had where the two incidences were completely unrelated. Director, do you have any thoughts on that?
We've taken that into consideration, and that's our recommendation. If the council wants to have a discussion about it, super prerogative.
I just wanted to clarify
what the charges were for the fishing with live bait. And he admitted to all of that, is that correct? So that would typically be, to be consistent with what we've done today, would be a letter of caution, is that correct? I would suggest that we separate these, that you'd have a letter of caution or make a recommendation, or I can't make that recommendation, but I'd recommend that somebody make a recommendation to have a letter of caution on that part, and then separate the charges. That's my recommendation.
That would be a one-year baseline, so it would still be a deviation from the exclusively on the baseline. Currently, it's reflecting the baseline combined for the deviation.
Correct. Normally, in the past, they've had multiple charges, so that it's not trying to do like 1 year and 1 year and two. It's just an aggravator, and we would increase that.
We have a recommendation.
So I will move that we reject the Post's recommendation and instead issue a one-year suspension on the Category D violation and also issue a letter of caution on the Category E violation.
I have a motion from Sheriff Sparks.
Second.
And I have a second from William Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Stephen Trout. Mr. Trout, here I'm getting the no signal for Mr. Trout or his attorney. Mr. Trout was formerly employed with Murray City Police Department. The sustained allegation is for a BCI violation. In this case, Post is recommending a 1.5-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from a 6-month, and that is because there were apparently 290 BCI violations over a period of 4 months. This was a case where it was determined that he was apparently using access into this BCI record, the same driver's license or the same license plate number, and was accessing it over and over again to trigger an activity on his activity log to represent that he was apparently working and performing law enforcement related functions when he in fact was not, and did that 290 times. He admitted that he accessed the protected record of the vehicle so that anyone, it would make it appear that he was, anyone monitoring his activity, that he was busier than he was. That was the admission in the Garrity interview. With his police department, he refused to participate in Post's investigation. He waived his right to an ALJ hearing, admitted to those facts, and again, Post is recommending an upward deviation of 1.5 years.
Questions for counsel? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
We accept the Post recommendation.
I have a motion to accept from Elena Stevens. Do I have a second? Second from Sheriff Sparks. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, counsel, if it's okay, we're going to circle back to Michael Clark now that his attorney is present and Mr. Clark is present also. Mr. Clark was formerly employed with South Salt Lake Police Department. The sustained allegation was an assault. Post is recommending the baseline 2-year suspension. This arose out of an incident at a club, a bar, where the wife of one of Mr. Clark's coworkers said that she had been sexually assaulted by another patron, and I'll add that patron was in fact convicted of a sexual assault, a sexual battery charge. During that incident at the bar, Mr. Clark approached the other patron to ask him about supposedly grabbing the woman's buttock. The patron responded, "Yeah, what?" And Mr. Clark punched the other patron. The other patron was not injured, later said he did not wish to press charges. Mr. Clark pled guilty to a disorderly conduct, Class C misdemeanor. And as I mentioned, the other patron was later convicted of sexual battery. Mr. Clark waived his right to the ALJ hearing and stipulated to those facts. If there's any questions, I'll take those, or I'll turn the time over to Mr. Evershed and Mr. Clark.
Mr. Evershed, do you want to lead?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're asking for is a downward deviation. We understand that there needs to be some kind of approach to this, but we're asking for a year suspension rather than the 2-year baseline. And the reason for that is, as has been spelled out, this is a very unique case. First of all, a little bit about my client. He's served in the Marines for 22 years, deployed 7 times, 4 in combat in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Egypt. He's been in law enforcement since 2020. He started work at the South Salt Lake Police Department. He's a trusted public servant. His chief even said, "I wish there were more like him." He's just diligent and good. But on the night that he's at the bar with some of his friends, while there, a person who we'll just call as Chad, went up to his friend's wife and just grabbed her buttocks, sexually assaulted her right there in the bar. This is undisputed. He was later charged with sexual battery, went to trial, found guilty by a jury. This caused distress to the woman. Her husband yelled at this individual as if he did that, and then Michael confronted him, came forward and asked him, "Is that what you did?" And he said, "Yeah," with a smirk. "Yeah, what?" And Michael, in response, punched him in his chivalrous response. And this was all seen on video. There's no dispute to that. As I mentioned before, this individual was charged with a sexual battery, went to a trial, and is found guilty by a jury. My client pled guilty to a disorderly conduct. Again, what we're asking for you to consider is that this isn't your typical kind of assault that happens between friends or between family members or between something else. This is a man, based off of his upbringing, based off of his training, based off of his protective instincts, saw something horrible, or at least was aware of something horrible, caused distress, and responded to it. So we understand that some suspension's merited. We're not asking for a letter of caution here, but we're just asking for a downward deviation for 1 year. And
morning, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize for taking your time up here. I did honorably serve the Marine Corps for 22 years in our nation, and I want to get back to serving the community of South Salt Lake or any community that would have me. I do enjoy being a peace officer. I know what I've done is wrong. I've learned a lot from it, and I pray that you all can take this into consideration. Thank you.
Are you currently employed?
No, sir, I'm not.
All right, thank you. Any questions for counsel or Mr. Duncan? Hearing none, do I have a motion?
I guess I do have a question. Is it typical that we consider the the reason behind the violence in these cases and weigh that heavily regarding why somebody assaulted somebody else?
The council can deviate from the recommendation, yes, based on the facts.
Aggravating or mitigating, yes.
I have a question before we make a motion. If we entertained a one-year suspension, is it effective what date?
That would be effective from September 3rd. 2021. Yeah, that was the date that he was placed on administrative leave.
9/3/21. Do I have a motion?
I have a question. So are we doing disorderly conduct or assault? Because if it isn't disorderly, wouldn't that be a category F?
Yeah, it's actually listed here as an assault if I'm not.
So there's assault category C, then what disorderly would be in a class C instead of
the matrix here.
Just ask some clarification.
To address that issue, it's charged as assault
because that is the conduct that occurred. It was caught on video, as was the other patrons, the transgressions as well. And so that's why it was charged as an assault, because that's what the conduct was.
That was what was weighed, correct?
Yes, that was what was in their
the notice of agency action.
So the finding from the AOJ would have been a waiver for an assault.
You have this notice of agency action.
So I'm prepared to make a motion.
You're prepared? Sharon, please.
I would move to accept Post recommendation in this case, although there are some factors there that maybe on an emotional level makes us understand the behavior, the reality of it for law enforcement officers if we're subject to those kinds of things on a regular basis, and we have to exercise a great deal of restraint in using force. We have to exercise a great deal of restraint when we're dealing with these very emotional situations. And so with that in mind, I would recommend that, or move that we accept the recommendation of POST.
So I have a motion to accept POST recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Sheriff Rigby. Do we have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The motion passes. Thank you, Council.
The next case, we're going to do Piper Palmer. The next case will be Piper Palmer. The council may recall that Ms. Palmer was before the council, I believe it was in January, the first session of this year, there was some disorderly conduct, two different incidences of disorderly conduct. Post made a recommendation. The council deviated fairly substantially upward from that suspension recommendation and imposed a sanction of revocation. Subsequently, Ms. Palmer and her counsel filed a motion for reconsideration. That came up at the last council as far as some procedural questions and how to affect that reconsideration process and how that should be done. And we've had some discussion since then that I think the director is going to address more broadly later on in the meeting. But in any event, the council and Post have agreed to allow Ms. Palmer and her attorney to address that upward deviation and ask the council to reconsider. And I guess before we get there, I'll just since it has been so long, give a quick the factual summary that we initially provided back in January. So this was a case where on December 31st, 2020, Piper Palmer and her boyfriend got into a possible domestic incident while driving to a party. Palmer was intoxicated and grabbed her boyfriend around the neck from the back seat while he was driving. The boyfriend pulled over and called the police for assistance. While officers were on the scene, Palmer yelled loudly at her boyfriend using profanity in a residential setting and yelled at the officers. Palmer grabbed one of the officer's heads and kicked at the other officer. She was placed in handcuffs, and she yelled at the officers to shoot her. Palmer was released from the scene with her supervisor from work. Fast forward to May 15th, 2020, Palmer became intoxicated while attending a party at a friend's home. Ms. Palmer ran through the yards of private residences and into a public park. Ms. Palmer's friends tried to get her back in the house, but she ran from them and yelled at them, telling them to shoot her. The friends called the police to deal with Palmer. Palmer was put in handcuffs and placed in the back of a police car to be taken to jail for intoxication. She continued yelling, and a 911 call was received from a block away about a woman screaming. Palmer was charged with intoxication in that case and pled guilty. She had waived her right to the administrative law hearing, and again, the post recommendation at that time was a one-year suspension. The baseline parameters for that were a letter of caution to a one-year suspension, and as I mentioned, post on a motion from one of the council members deviated and revoked her license. So if there's questions for me about that procedural background, I can field those or turn the time over to Ms. Palmer.
Just as a reminder, the council is required to accept the ALJ's findings. The findings are based upon the waiver, the count one being intoxication, count two, disorderly, count three, intoxication, and count four, disorderly. The intoxications are seized and the disorderlies are infractions.
Thanks.
Counselor, Ms. Palmer?
Yeah, so what we have and what she's been facing has been category F. Issues, all of them, nothing greater than a Class C misdemeanor, which has a range of a baseline up to a year. And then the sentence or that came in was a revocation. And what we try to do is in our motion for reconsideration, it's just to point humbly the post counsel just to some due process concerns and some case law concerns that as individuals, whether it's within a department or with post, that they are still entitled to due process. And one of those things is just to be proportionate. We've cited in our motion this very similar case at Burgess versus the Department of Corrections. This is a 2017 case, very similar, in that Mr. Burgess appeared to be intoxicated in an airport shuttle. And the recommendation there from his supervisor was recommended time without pay, but then he was eventually terminated. This goes up to the Court of Appeals, and for due process concerns, the Court of Appeals just reversed it, citing that if the penalty is so harsh as to constitute an abuse rather than an exercise of discretion, it cannot be allowed to stand. And if the punishment is clearly disproportionate to the offense and exceeds the bounds of reasonableness and rationality, then it cannot. And so that's what we're dealing with. And what we've submitted to post counsel is, I think, a pretty fair and judicious way just to handle this here rather than courts or something. We understand that anything can happen. That you know, recommendations or misunderstandings can happen, especially you know, if an individual is not here to address some of those things. What we're trying to do is just unwind that a little bit, come back, and just ask for you to follow post counsel's guidance. In this case, it is an upward deviation. In this case, it is a one-year suspension. And just to understand for due process concerns that would be an issue that's there. Especially when we're working with the matrix and whatnot. The other thing is that we cited in our motion was that also a due process concern is consideration of violations that were not substantiated by post. Concerns that maybe this was a domestic case, or maybe this was an assault case, or maybe something like this. Well, when she went through her agency or went through post, she was not charged with any of those things. And so to consider hypotheticals or maybe what happened would be a due process concern or violation. So what we're just asking for the council to do is just to reconsider this. We are okay with the recommended sanction. We are okay with that. It's a one-year sanction. It's something, and I want you to all know that my client is doing much better, that there were certain triggers in her life with relationships, with work, with other things that were going on, but now through therapy and treatment and continued things that she's doing much better and that she would like just to continue on. And so I'd be happy to cede if the pulpit, if there are no more questions.
Council, just confirming, all of these charges were Class Cs, is that correct?
Class C misdemeanors.
Okay, thank you.
And there were also infractions as well. Either Class C or infraction.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any questions for counsel?
I'll ask. Sheriff? So when this case originally came in front of us, this is why I asked the question earlier, considering things that were mentioned in the affidavit. On the first one incident, was Ms. Palmer considered in custody at the time when she kicked at or swung at the officer? Because that's a third-degree felony.
Well,
so the question is, for me, I don't know exactly the technical term of that. I do know that she was never charged with a third-degree felony, and that Post has never brought to the Post Council any kind of felonious charge. That we're all just working with the facts that we have before us.
So in other cases, we've considered facts.
Yeah.
Yes, so
yeah. You're welcome to consider
But I
facts.
Think that's why the motion was made. It was considered that assault on an officer was part of that consideration at the
I
time.
I think that's what Chief Swanson said, too.
That's exactly why he said it.
I don't have any concerns with the appropriateness of a reconsideration. I do have some concerns about some of the argument for a reconsideration. I think it is the obligation of this council and has been the practice of this council to consider all of the facts that are before us in a notice of agency action. In this case, I think we did that, right? The clearly stated facts that were stipulated to by this officer indicated that there could possibly be other violations, and I think that the question, and I was the one who asked the question specifically to those violations, I think we should always be looking for, is this an aggravating or a mitigating circumstance? The fact in our minds that there is something that's left out there requires clarification. And asking the questions about those other potential violations, I think, is an effort to get that clarification. Is this something that we should consider an aggravator or something that we should consider a mitigator? I'm concerned about this argument in this case because I would hate to see it create a chilling effect for the council to not ask questions. Certainly we shouldn't be asking questions that are outside the facts that are presented to us. Once an officer is presented with a notice of agency action and has the ability to read all the facts and has the choice either to stipulate to those facts through a waiver or contest them through an ALJ process, I think those things are perfectly appropriate for us to consider as a council.
If I might add, just to clarify, and I'm not in any way disagreeing with that analysis, just to clarify, though, that from Post's perspective, those other additional charges were not substantiated during the investigation. So the
being clear as part of the question, right? The question to the investigator was, they weren't sustained. Is there a reason why they weren't sustained? And I think the reason we got ended up probably being a mitigator.
And if I understand the process as well, whether there's a charge or a criminal charge or not is at some point not relevant because we're considering the conduct that underlies that, not necessarily the resolution. And so, important questions, and I agree with what Sheriff Sparks is saying wholeheartedly. I'd repeat it all.
And so I think all of us are really on the same page. Should there be questions? Yes. Do we need to get to the bottom of these ideas and what's happening here? Yes. Can this be a factor in aggravating circumstances or mitigating circumstances? Yes. All of that is appropriate, and we're not arguing against any of that. What our motion is that for due process concerns, when there's consistency, when we're talking about the matrix and like the ability for a person to have some kind of understanding as to what they're facing, in this case, that still applies to every kind of governmental agency, including Post Council. And so in weighing those, we're okay with an upward deviation. We're okay with a sanction. We're okay with a suspension. We're okay with all of those things. But to go in these categories when they're Class C misdemeanors or infractions and all the way up to a level of complete revocation, that's the issue. And so what we're asking for is continue the process, continue to ask questions, continue to weigh all of these different things, but also for due process concerns and worries that we also need to be in the parameters of that. So when it comes to due process concerns of such as proportionality, that's one. Consistency, that's another.
believing that charges should have been filed or should have been alleged, but just there wasn't finding. I mean, those are the things that we would ask post counsel to humbly consider and then come forth with the appropriate recommendation, understanding the due process mechanisms of proportionality and consistency.
Any questions for Ms. Palmer or counsel?
Question for counsel. So,
is it for me or?
Sorry, for. So, what are our options as a council? What if I would like to make a motion that in the end we continue forward and very much appreciate the reconsideration motion, but that we want to keep it as it has been and reaffirm that decision, then what's the appropriate motion?
So just to kind of recap on how we got here procedurally, there's a procedure in the Administrative Procedures Act, the Utah APA, that provides for a request for reconsideration of an agency division or agency decision. And in this case, the decision makers at the agency head level decided that this was a case that was appropriate to bring back to the council to allow Ms. Palmer to present additional, not additional evidence, but to just clarify her position. Because of some of the, I guess, irregularities that Mr. Ebershed pointed out. But again, it's back in this council's court to either sustain the decision that was made earlier or, based on what it's heard today, perhaps revisit that sanction and perhaps try to squeeze it back into the baseline range that was, if not the baseline that Post recommended, at least the within kind of the range that is provided for. Does that make sense?
Except for reconsideration, which means you get to reconsider it all again. It's all anew. This council must accept the findings of the ALJ, which is those B or infraction of C misdemeanors. Council can deviate all the way down from letter of caution all the way up to revocation. But as Mr. Ebershed was saying, there has to be justification for it. And if you are justifying it on unsubstantiated charges and conduct that was not proven at the ALJ hearing because there was a waiver, the only findings are those four C's infraction, then that becomes an issue. So,
if I may say something. So at the point of discussion, I think a more appropriate question in this situation where you, as a council member, feel like, okay, there's probably another charge here. The proper question is to ask Post, did you consider this conduct? And then we would be compelled to answer that yes or no. And if we did, we would tell you either we have enough evidence, and if we did, then it would be on this notice. That's not what happened the last meeting. And I think that kind of a dialogue would end that, end any future discussion about that potential or assumed case that we may have neglected it. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Good advice, and I don't contest that at all. I would just point out that the motion for revocation was made prior to those questions being asked, and I do believe that the proportionality argument that's made today is appropriate. I think it is something that we should consider.
And I believe if we in the future go down that line of questioning, it reinforces the checks and balances between council and the Post staff to make sure that we're covering all the bases.
And so that was a very good question. What could happen from here? And one thing that can continue to happen is this can continue to be reviewed. And the necessity of that, of creating potential law before a court of appeals that's now handling these things, is probably oftentimes not the best thing for everybody involved. Now it may be. If that's the way it is, then that's the way it is. But then all of us are tied with that kind of issue as well. So in terms of answering the question, what can happen from here, there are additional processes that can take place from here. But we just appreciate POST allowing us to get reconsidered for this before any of those other options could be considered.
Thanks, Council. Ms. Palmer, do you have anything to address to the... Thank you. Any further questions?
Mr. Hale, if that's okay. So, Andrew, when it comes to baseline, just to be clear, what is the baseline if we were to follow?
The baseline in this case was...
Staff, I believe, right?
A six-month suspension and POST recommended because of the multiple offenses, an upward deviation to 1 year.
Three months.
Okay.
Yeah, baseline on F is 3 months, and they aggravated it because it was consecutive, similar to the other case that went to the 6 months. And then with the infractions up to a year, is my understanding.
Multiple counts and multiple episodes.
Thank you.
Is what gives the recommendation.
Two separate episodes.
Two separate episodes involving two counts in each episode.
Thank you.
And is it true to Mr. Hale that the recommendation from POST, just to be clear, is a year and a half?
1 year.
1 year.
1 year suspension.
I have a question on our council authority. If we entertain a year, do we also have the authority to suggest continued therapy?
Not in this context. In this context, with this discipline, you're able to go from letter of caution up to revocation and suspensions in between. If this became a fitness for duty, then you could consider criteria that must be met before recertification.
So I have one question as well. So as our council, for the post council, do you think we went out of line on the guidelines? So that's the question. Did we go out of line or not? Because if we did, then
let me be very careful with this one. I believe that Mr. Evershed's motion for reconsideration was proper and warranted. I think that this should be revisited, and I do not think that the motion for revocation that was accepted had sufficient justification to warrant that at the previous hearing.
Thank you. Chairman, Mr. Austin, sorry to put you on the spot. I respect you immensely. Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
Gotcha. Thanks.
Sorry.
I didn't want to be yelled at.
A lot easier not to move the mic.
The one thing that keeps coming back to me, it was a motion by Chief Swanson, who I consider eminently reasonable. He always has been since I've been on this council. And he felt like the, we'll call it uncharged conduct, of grabbing someone's head and then at another time kicking a police officer, warranted going up to a revocation. Since I was sitting at the chair, as the chair at that time, I couldn't say anything other than just conduct the meeting. It might be interesting to hear what the Court of Appeals has to say about it.
That's another option within the guidelines as well, with there being two separate incidents that are being considered. Could we consider those separate suspension? So could we go to up to a two-year suspension within
the guidelines? That's where they did it, because they're still category F, but they're aggravated, and because of the aggravation and the multiple charge, you are at the maximum of the range.
With just the 1 year?
With the category F. Anything above that involves, for the revocation, usually involves felonies, Class A, sex on duties, lying under Gary. So, results of conduct.
Even with the two incidents, there couldn't be consecutive.
They essentially are arguing for consecutive because the baseline for one would be at 3 months, and they're arguing for 12 months.
Well, we do have the authority to go up to revocation.
You have the authority to ignore the recommendation and do a letter caution to revocation and anything in between.
Mr. Chair, are you looking for a motion to do this, to reiterate what we already did, or did we just talk about it? It
would be a motion on the recommendation from Post today, which would be
a one-year suspension.
I think we kind of get into a little bit of dangerous territory. If we go from 1 year to revocation, that's a pretty substantial jump. And I understand, I was there, and I understand the problems and the conflict and why we did that, but I think then we set a precedence that is unhealthy.
So is that a motion? So
when you're ready for a motion, I go ahead and make the motion that we do change the revocation to a one-year suspension.
Do I have any further discussion prior to that?
So I have not asked a question.
Go ahead. So this is a motion for reconsideration, correct?
Yes. So
is that like setting the clock back and say, we've never heard this before?
Correct.
Let's hear all the evidence up front.
Correct.
You get to
reconsider the finding and substitute anything you.
I'll second the motion that has been made.
So I've got a motion from Chief Silk
to accept Post recommendation. I got a second from Sheriff Sparks to accept the recommendation from Post. Do I have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm opposed.
On opposed, I show Spence Austin and Nathan Curtis and Sheriff Rigby. The motion passes.
Do you guys want to
hear?
We've
got one more case before we get to
anybody that's in need of a break. I was going to finish up these next few, and then before we go into the closed session, then we'll close it, go into a break.
Very good. We have one more that's also sort of a unique situation, and then understand we'll break before we have two.
Does that work?
The two final that I think both have the potential for going into.
Anybody need anything right now? We good? Let's go ahead and move forward.
Okay. So Jared Barney. Is another sort of unique case. Mr. Barney was also came before the council in January on a default over an official misconduct charge. He, after some discussion, we determined that he was still within the appeal timeline, so the council kind of tabled a decision on that while he went back to the administrative law judge and sought to have his order of default set aside. He was successful in doing that. That case went to an administrative law judge trial hearing, and the ALJ ended up sustaining Post's original charge of official misconduct. So he has now been, that conduct has now been sustained. So we're back before the council now for the sanction phase. And just briefly, the conduct, Mr. Barney was found to have represented himself as a law enforcement officer while off duty. To access video footage from a business for a personal matter. The footage was only provided to Mr. Barney because he represented himself as a law enforcement officer. And during the Garrity interview, he admitted that he committed an unauthorized act, which purported to be an act of his office to benefit himself. And I kind of recap the procedural background there. The recommendation from Post in this case is a one-year suspension, which is the baseline for that Category D offense.
Any questions for counsel? Assume that's a train as well.
Those are aliens.
Any hearing nothing? I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Move we accept agency recommendation.
Motion from Spence Austin to accept Post recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second
from Dr. Sween. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
So, do we have any of those other two that we're holding? We had, I think,
Baugh and Russell.
Okay. Let's go ahead. Are they here? Are they present?
Yeah, Mr. Russell's here.
Okay.
We can make this is where you're going to close session. On this
the next two will be making the same motion.
Okay.
So I don't know if right now is a good time.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go take a break. We'll go ahead, and I need a motion to go into recess.
So moved. I've got a motion and a second. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes. We'll start again at 11:30.
And if you do not come back, the Sergeant at Arms will track you down.
I think just to create a record, I'd like to just introduce the case with the name of the officer and what the allegations are, and then we'll let Mr. Evershed make a motion.
Let me make sure I have a quorum first.
Okay.
And then we'll do that. You need a 10, right?
Because I think we'll need separate motions for each case.
Okay. Yes. All right. Let's go ahead, counsel.
So we're starting with Russell?
Yes.
Okay. So... this next case is Scott Russell. He was formerly with South Jordan Police Department. The sustained allegations were for kidnapping, reckless endangerment, criminal trespass, and assault. And Post's recommendation in this case is or revocation, and that's the baseline. So I'll turn the time over to Mr. Evershed.
Go ahead, and then I'll do a motion.
Yes, Your Honor. I feel like I'm in court again, Your Honor. We would be making a motion pursuant to Utah law just to close this session as to the sensitive matters that we'll be discussing.
Will you describe the sensitive matters?
Mental health
issues. So I need a motion to go into closed session to discuss mental health matters.
Second.
So I have one from Spence Austin. Do I have a second?
Second
from Melina Stevens. Anyone who is not part of Post Counsel needs to step out.
Do we need a second motion? Do we want to do a second motion after this first one?
Yes. Yeah, let's go ahead and hear Mr. Russell, and then we'll do a second there. Yeah, please.
You said not part of Post Counsel step out. I'm just wondering if we can retain the investigator that was involved.
We can call for the. I think we have to call for the investigator.
The investigator, Post Counsel, and Counsel.
So I can have the investigators. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And Julie gets to stay.
And Julie to record. Correct. Sorry. And
I can turn everything off. So you just give me a minute before you start.
Okay.
So let's.
Let it be noted we're now back in session. I need to on Mr. Russell. I need a those in favor of the motion.
Well, hold on.
Okay. Go ahead. So
yeah, let's
restate I need we're now back in session on Mr. Russell, and I need a motion restated, please. Mr. Crowley.
Motion is a 4-year suspension on completion of his mental health evaluation, a letter from a licensed psychiatrist before coming back to be employed.
And a letter from the psychiatrist is that he's fit for current duty
to be able to perform the duties.
In addition to successful completion of mental health court?
Yes, that was part of it.
Perfect second.
So I got a second from Ms. Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to, I need a motion to go into closed session.
Now, how before us the case of
Annette Bau. Her counsel is present.
Bau.
Okay,
yeah.
We keep going. Sorry, Ms. Bau.
Okay, so Annette Baugh is, she was formerly employed by Cache County Sheriff's Office. The sustained allegation is, by Post, is a Category G unfit for duty. And I understand that we, again, are going to have a motion to close the meeting to discuss that.
Yes, pursuant to Utah laws, we'll be discussing mental health matters and concerns. We would just ask that this session be closed.
Thank you, counsel. Do I have someone to make a motion, please?
Sorry.
I've got a motion from Ms. Stevens. Do I have a second?
Second
from Spence Austin. At this point, anyone who is not on post counsel or an investigator we need to leave, we'll go ahead and proceed.
Council, would you like to lead, please? We're back now back in open session for Ms. Baugh. Do I have a motion?
I move that we accept the post recommendation for Category G indefinite suspension pending a fit for duty from a licensed psychiatrist.
I have a motion to accept post recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Sheriff Rigby. Any further conversation? Hearing none, and I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. That was a long agenda. Thank you.
Okay, we
have. So, supposed to give you all lunch?
What's that? Yeah, right. Hey, there's no lunch for us. Ms. Williams.
Yes, I'm sorry. Here's the boring background. With the three here that I have a question on, and these are one for Alex Chambers, Michael Duncan, and David Jorgensen, and these are pertaining to the wildlife.
Uh-huh.
The wildlife one. I just wanted to see the consistency on these, because the one Alex Chambers had a little caution, but he had 40 hours of unpaid leave, and then Michael Duncan had wasted wildlife, which the other one was as well, and he had a letter of caution waiver, but he had 8 hours of unpaid suspension, and so that 40 hours of unpaid leave, 8 hours of unpaid suspension, and then the third person, David Jorgensen, had the letter of caution and waiver like the other ones, but he had a letter of reprimand and still employed. So I was trying to figure why the Chambers had the huge, you know, the big difference, 40 hours.
That's agency specific, so each administrator can impose policy. They can they work for different agencies, and they can impose different sanctions on that employee. So it's different from UHP to Park City to Salt Lake City. They can impose a range of different things based on what their individual policies are.
Okay, that was my concern, because I was wanting to be consistent all the way around.
No, great line. Thank you.
We don't have any second.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, please.
I'd also like to reconsider the Desmond Perkins case before we adjourn. Desmond was the North Army officer.
Uh-huh.
He's back. He's here in the hall. So if
where's counsel? Are you prepared to hear Desmond Perkins?
Yeah. Just to clarify, is there a motion to reconsider that?
Okay. We voted on that.
If he's here, we can. Yep,
okay.
He's here.
Yeah, maybe just. If we can speak to the purpose of the reconsideration.
First and second, then we need to. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We'll go ahead and listen to it.
So, in looking at the case, Officer Perkins came in and he notified his agency that he had discharged his taser. The only discrepancy and fault on his part was he said the wrong day. So, if I believe, I don't want to speak for him, but Layton City has a policy: if you discharge a weapon of any kind, you have to report that on the day it occurs. He didn't want to get in trouble, so he said it happened on whatever the date was, the 13th instead of the 12th, I'll just say. So I made the motion to follow the six-month recommendation. I think the 6 month is too long, and I would like to change that motion to make it a letter of caution rather than a six-month suspension. And that would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
So we have a motion to go for a letter of caution versus the 6 month or the post recommendation. Do we have a second on that?
I'll second that motion.
You got a second for Sheriff Sparks. Any further discussion?
If I can speak to that just real quick.
Please do.
I think since he self-reported, I think we're dealing with, yes, he did say the wrong day, and yes, he should realize that he needs to be totally truthful with his administration, but he also got 3 days off without pay before he left the city of Layton and coming to North Salt Lake and, North Ogden. And the North Ogden chief sent the letter stating he's been a model officer. Also, it's very difficult coming from a small agency to hire people right now. So that 6-month suspension would put him in a position he needed to be terminated, or he would have to be retained in a different position with North Ogden for 6 months before he could be reinstated. So that's the reasoning that I'd like to hear.
I still see this as an honesty issue too, though. That's just.
I do. I see it as an honesty issue, but it's the same, the ones we dealt with the wildlife, they also had a problem and self-reported and they were honest with that, but you know they still took an animal and left it there, and the other ones that we dealt with today. And I know it's a little bit different, but I still think that yes, what you should have done is been totally honest and 100%. I think he's learned that and learned that with a letter of caution rather than a snitch, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think a better comparison would be the one we heard just prior to this, which was the dishonest conduct by the Payson PD, who was advised by his supervisors to be truthful, and there was continual contact, and he was not, and he got a 6-month suspension, where Mr. Perkins self-reported, did the right thing. He did give the wrong date. There is some accountability needs to be there, but I don't think the comparable to the one prior to that. I think that one was a more egregious violation, but got the same sustained finding from Post.
So we still have a motion and a second. We want to vote on that. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Anyone opposed?
Motion
passes.
Nobody opposed. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. Again, I'm truly sorry to pose Layton PD, North Ogden. Over the past 7 months, it's been with me the entire time. I try to do the right thing every day, and this was a mental lapse, and I should have done the right thing by saying it happened the day before instead of the day of, and I take full responsibility. And when I was here earlier, I was truthful with Sergeant, and I told him everything, and I was going to take the 6 month, but I appreciate you all voting on the letter of caution, and I promise this won't be an issue moving forward. So thank you all.
Thanks, Mr. Perkins.
Thank you.
Okay, we're ready to go. Anything else? Council, we're done with all discipline, is that correct? Thank you. We're now looking at reconsideration of subcommittee report from Director Stevenson and his wounded warrior arm.
All right. So as you may recall, Council Wand instructed me to create a subcommittee, and we got a few of you together and discussed this reconsideration situation. And those who are on the subcommittee, please pipe in. The committee agreed that our proposal to the council would be when reconsideration is filed, then the director of post and the chairperson of the council will make the determination whether that reconsideration should come before the council, and then ultimately the council decides whether they want to hear it or not, right? I get that right? Act as agency head. So that's consistent with the statute. So we have two people that will be the decision makers on the reconsideration. If one of the two, they can't agree, then that will be brought before the council, and then the council will vote on whether to hear it or not. Okay. Did I miss anything? Vince, did I miss anything?
No.
Okay.
That's how I remember it, and I'm supportive of it.
Do we need a vote? No?
No, because we're not making any rules or policy based upon it. It's just going to be our SOP on how it's going to happen. That if it comes to, if there's a reconsideration that we heard by the two members, you and the chair, and if there's a dispute, then it comes back.
So basically, if I'm understanding right, it's just adding another person to that decision making to bring it forward.
Right. Okay. And if they disagree, then it's considered granted.
Okay.
Well, the clarification, correct, because wasn't there concern last time that is it you or the yes. chairperson? And, great.
And if both major and the chair decline reconsideration, it's done. Yes. If one declines and one approves, it comes back. If both approve, it comes back.
All right. Well, I have, Chair.
Thank you. A reset for the next go around. We had so much fun today.
What about September? Mid September.
19th through the 22nd.
Sheriff's Conference is the 21st, 22nd. With roundtable on the 23rd.
On the afternoon of the 23rd?
Friday the 23rd? Friday, if you wanted to.
Where's the location?
St. George.
St. George.
Yeah. What about Tuesday the 20th? That's another long time.
Tuesday the 20th?
There are some things going on with the Sheriff's Conference, but it's not part of the formal.
I would defer to the sheriffs whether that you can make that happen or not. You guys make the recommendation.
Director,
how does that work for staff?
What's that?
How does that work for staff?
Well, we always prefer it here because logistically and then all the equipment, it's just a lot easier. But, you know, we'll do the council's will.
Tell us what day.
Recommendation on date. Anywhere from September 20th through the 23rd. What works best for you?
Well, we don't necessarily have to have it in conjunction with the Sheriff's Conference. I don't know how many people, how many council members are really planning on being there, or how many effects we have.
Show hands, how many like to travel down to, or we're going to be there, I guess.
We're going to be there.
We're going to be there. That would make a difference, this room. I mean, I want to make sure we got a quorum. I mean, it looks like we probably would have a difficult time posting that, unless we pick a different day, which we can do prior to or after that.
What about the 15th?
September
15th?
Thursday.
It's a great day.
I have a city council that day. That if it goes long, it screws me up.
Turnaround time would be better and up and up. Like the last week, instead of moving it up.
It's all the
20th. Yeah, right.
28th, I have a full scale evacuation of the city.
Did you anticipate something happening?
Yeah, well, you know.
That earthquake got you scared a little?
Yeah, right?
29th? Yeah.
Like, who's got a chance to hunt this year?
I didn't. I did.
We do it at 9 again. Probably
we do it in the morning, yes.
Or the 27th.
27th? Works better for me.
I can do the 27th.
Yeah. Does that work for you? 10? Does that work for the rest of you?
Yes, 10 here.
What's that? 9 a.m.?
27th? 9 a.m. or 10?
9. Get it done early.
Well, we did 9 today.
Just kidding. So 9 or 10?
Just don't put 26 cases on.
That's everybody the danger of 9 o'clock.
27th at 9 a.m.?
27th at 9 a.m.
Okay.
Here. Yes, Chris. Here. Thank you for your time. Great to see you all again. With that, I have a motion to adjourn.
Yeah.
Got a motion. Second?
Second.
We're good to go.